Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour, Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is September 4, 2017, or it is Eli 14, 2021. We will start our second service today with a song entitled Bring Them In from the Fields of Sin. Hark, 'tis the shepherd's voice I hear, out in the desert dark and drear, calling the sheep who've gone astray, far from the shepherd's fold away. Bring them in, bring them in from the fields of sin. Bring them in, bring the wanderer to Yahshua. To go and help the shepherd kind, help him the wandering ones to find. To bring him back into the fold, where there'll be shepherds from the cold. Bring them in, bring them in from the fields of sin. Bring them in, bring the wanderers to Yahshua. Out in the desert, hear the cry. Out on the mountains, bald and wan. Hark, 'tis the Master speaks to thee. Go find the sheep where'er they be. Bring them in, bring them in from the fields of sin. Bring the wanderers to Yahshua. Revival and Reformation Part 2. It says that on page of volume 2TG, page volume number 8, page 23. Joel 2:24. Revival and Reformation Part 2. And the floor shall be full of the wheat, and the fat shall overflow with the wine and oil. Inspiration is not speaking of the spiritual things only, merely of the material things as well. For the rain and newly revealed truth shall therefore produce a great harvest of souls, as well as the abundance of the provisions. Joel 2:25-32. And I will restore unto you the years that the locust hath eaten, the canker worm, and the caterpillar, and the palmer worm, my great army which I sent among you. And you shall eat in plenty, and be satisfied, and praise the name of Yahweh your Elohim that hath dealt wondrously with you. And my people shall never be ashamed. And then you shall know that I am in the midst of Israel, and that I am the Yahweh your Elohim, and none else. And my people shall never be ashamed. And it shall come to pass afterwards that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. Your old men shall dream dreams. Your young men shall see vision, and also upon the servants and upon the handmaids in those days will I pour out my spirit, and I will show wonders in the heaven and in the earth, blood and fire, and pillars of smoke. The sun shall be turned into darkness, and the moon into blood, before the great and terrible day of Yeshua come. And it shall come to pass that whosoever shall call on the name of the Yahshua shall be delivered. For in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem shall be deliverance, as Yahweh has said, and in the remnant whom Yeshua shall call. Here we see that those who call on the name of Yahweh after the latter rain falls shall find deliverance upon the Mount Zion and in Jerusalem also, and the remnant whom Yeshua the Yahweh shall call. For the first word, the preposition for, of the next chapter shows that the prophecy of the chapter 2 continues through chapter 3. Joel 3, verse 1 and 2. For behold, in those days and in that time, when I shall bring again the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem, I will also gather all nations and will bring them down into the valley of the Jehoshaphat, and will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land. Now these verses explain why, how, and when Elohim's people are delivered in the Mount Zion and in Jerusalem. These things, you see, are to take place when he brings again the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem. Then shall bring all the nations into the valley of Jehoshaphat, and there plead for all his captive people, whom the nations have scattered throughout the world. Joel 3:3, and they have cast lots for my people, and have given a boy for an harlot, and sold a girl for wine, that they might drink. Verse 3 reveals the vile practices of the world. Joel 3:4-7. Yea, and what have you to do with me, O Tyre and Zidon, and all the coast of Palestine? Will you render me a recompense, and if you recompense me swiftly and speedily, will I return your recompense upon your own head, because you have taken my silver and my gold, and have carried into your temples my goodly pleasant things. For the children also of Judah and the children of Jerusalem have ye sold unto the Grecians, and that ye might remove them far from their border. Behold, I will raise them out of the place where ye have sold them, and will return your recompense upon your own head. Tyre and Zidon and the coast of Palestine, then those nations which have scattered Elohim's people, shall have their reward. What shall their recompense be? Here is the answer. Joel 3:8-10. And I will sell your sons and your daughters into the hand of the children of Judah, and they shall sell them unto the Sabaeans, unto a people far off, for the Yahweh has spoken it. Proclaiming this among the Gentiles, prepare war, wake up the mighty man, that all the men of war draw near, let them come up, beat your plowshares into swords, and your pruning hoofs into spears, let the weak say, I am strong. Inasmuch as the nations will be preparing for war when these prophecies are being fulfilled, it is plain to see that the atomic weapons will not bring peace. Joel 3:11. Assemble yourselves and come, all ye heathen, and gather yourselves together round about. Thither cause our mighty ones to come down, O Yahweh. Here we are told that Yahweh's mighty ones are to meet the armies of the heathen. And where will Elohim judge the people? The following verses give the answer. Joel 3:12-14. Let the heathen be wakened, and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there will I sit to judge all the heathen round about. Put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, get ye down, for the press is full, the fast overflow, for their wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of the Yahweh is near in the valley of decision. Yes, here is described the day of the decision. The multitude will then have to decide either to serve Yahweh and live, or to continue serving the devil and perish with him. Joel 3:15-16. The sun and the moon shall be darkened, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. The Yahweh also shall roar out of Zion, and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the heavens and the earth shall shake, but the Yahweh will be the hope of his people and the strength of the children of Israel. For today, the world is now approaching, and how blind unto the fact is even the church herself. Joel 3:17-21. So shall you know that I am the Yahweh your Elohim, dwelling in Zion, my holy mountain. Then shall Jerusalem be holy, and there shall be no strangers pass through her any more. And it shall come to pass in that day that the mountains shall drop down new wine, and the hills shall flow with milk. And all the rivers of Judah shall flow with the waters, and a fountain shall come forth of the house of the Yahweh, and shall water the valley of Shittim. Egypt shall be a desolation, and Edom shall be a desolate wilderness, for the violence against the children of Judah, because they have shed innocent blood in their land. But Judah shall dwell forever, and Jerusalem from generation to generation. For I will cleanse their blood that I have not cleansed, for Yahweh dwelleth in Zion. Now this Judah is the house of David. And I'm going to reread that again and make some emphasis on it. Joel 3:17-21. So shall you know that I am the Yahweh, your Elohim, dwelling, or your Yahshua, your Savior, your King, dwelling in Zion, my holy mountain. So Yahshua's got his holy mountain set up. Now he's dwelling here. Then shall Jerusalem be holy, and there shall no strangers pass through her any more. Now this is right here in this 12th periodic hour that we're in now. This is before probation closes. And it shall come to pass in that day that the mountain shall drop down new wine, and the hills shall flow with milk. And all the rivers of Judah shall flow with the waters, and a fountain shall come forth of the house of Yahweh, and shall water the valley of Shittim. Egypt shall be a desolation, and Edom shall be a desolate wilderness, for the violence against the children of Judah, because they have shed innocent blood in their land. So Judah shall dwell forever, and Jerusalem from generation to generation, for I will cleanse their blood that I have not cleansed, for the Yahweh dwelleth in Zion. So it says the mountains are going to drop down new wine, the hills are going to flow with milk, and all the rivers of Judah. They didn't say all the rivers of the 10 tribes of Israel. It says the rivers of Judah, the lawgiver, the 2 tribes that is in charge of the capital at Jerusalem, in charge of the holy city, shall flow with the waters, and the fountain shall come forth of the house of the Yahweh, and shall water the valley of Shittim. Egypt shall be a desolation. Egypt is going to be made desolate. That's where your Muslims were born. In other words, that's where the house of Edom was born. Shall be a desolation, says right here, Egypt shall be a desolation, and Edom shall be a desolate wilderness. This is the Seventh-day Adventist Church today. It's going to become a desolate wilderness for the violence against the children of Judah, which are your Davidians, Seventh-day Adventists, because they have shed innocent blood in their land. But Judah shall dwell forever. What do you mean they shed innocent blood? The Adventists stood in the way of their members accepting new truth and it cost them their eternal soul salvation. The members that were blocked from accepting the advancing truth of the house of Judah, and I wasn't allowed to enter into it. Adventists stood in the way of it. That's what they call shedding innocent blood in the land. Our final cleansing is to be in our own land. For the scriptures you see are correlated. One truth explains another. Verses and chapters, therefore, shall not be isolated from their context if they are to be rightly understood. A correct idea cannot be built upon any one verse when isolated from its continuity, and only when we take Yahweh at His word can we, in truth, study the scriptures. Thus we need but the key word to unlock the mysteries of Yahweh, and here we have it. Revival and Reformation. These are your key words. A change of the ideas and practices, therefore, is our greatest need. Without this, we are sure to be found among those who shall say, "For the mountains and the rocks, unto the mountains and the rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand?" Revelation 6:16-17. Okay, that ends that study. Let's go now to two timely greetings, number 30. We're going to take up this title for this one is The Revival and Reformation Crowned with the Purification. March 6, 1948, by V.T. Harter. I was exactly about 10 years old when he gave this sermon. So that would be about 69 years ago. The text for our subject this afternoon is the Malachi's Prophecy. It treats of a revival reformation such as the world has never yet known. Moreover, the fact that the prophecy is written in such a way as partially to apply unto the ancient Israel, and yet specifically for the people in the latter days, for those who are approaching the great and dreadful day of Yahweh, prove that the reformation needed in the Malachi's day is needed also in our day. There is nothing so mysterious in the writings of Malachi but what any Bible student can comprehend by studying the book itself. I shall therefore study with you the last two chapters. The first two you can study at your leisure. We shall begin with the Malachi 3:1-2. Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me, and the Yeshua whom you seek shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant whom you delight in. Behold, he shall come, saith the Yeshua of hosts, but he may abide the day of his coming, and he shall stand when he appeareth, for he is like a refiner's fire and like full of soap. Two persons are here discouraged of you. The messenger of the Yeshua. The messenger is to precede the coming of the Yeshua. He is to prepare the way. Then the Yeshua is to appear. And who could this messenger be, if not the one whom the Yeshua names? For he declares, "Behold, I will send you the Elijah, the prophet, before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Yeshua," Malachi 4:5. Okay, so for this messenger of the covenant, of the promise, and typical Elijah, the prophet shall prepare the way, he shall restore all things. As he prepares the way, the Yeshua will suddenly come to his temple. Under his congregation of the house of David in the 12th parabolic hour, during the time of the judgment of the living and the harvest time, to start getting ready for the harvest. And what is his work to be? To purify or cleanse his people by the weeding the unrepentant sinners from among them. For the question, but who may abide the day of his coming, solemnly declares that we had better now get busy and thee what it takes to make us stand before the cleansing began. Whom in particular will he purify? Let us read. Malachi 3:3. And he shall sit as refined and purify the silver, and he shall purify the sons of Levi and purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Yahshua an offering in righteousness. For the Levites, you know, comprise the tribe from which came the priesthood, the ministers of the Yahweh, and since this prophecy is to meet its complete fulfillment in our day, the figure is clear. The Levites, the ministers of Yahweh in our day, are to be purified. What then? Malachi 3:4. Then shall the offering of the Judah and Jerusalem be present unto the Yahweh as in the days of the old and as in the former years. This verse implies that the offerings which we now bring unto Yahweh are not pleasing unto Him, not pleasing as in times past. Here we have the glorious promise that not long hence there shall be a pure ministry, a pure people, a people without guile in their mouth, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, Ephesians 5:27. And those who do not measure to this standard will not stand. Thereafter no sinner will stand in their midst, for henceforth, says Yahshua, there shall no more come into thee the uncircumcised and the unclean. Isaiah 52:1. This glorious future is moreover reiterated by the spirit of the prophecy in our day. Here it is. Only those who have withstood temptation and the strength of the Mighty One will be permitted to act a part in the proclaiming of the third angel's message when it shall have sworn to the loud cry. Review in Herald, November 18, 1908. This loud cry is in the 12th parabolic hour. We have been inclined to think that where there are no faithful ministers, there can be no true believers. But this is not the case. Yahweh has promised that where the shepherds are not true, he will take charge of the flock himself. Elohim has never made the flock wholly dependent upon the human instrumentality. But the days of the purification of Yahshua are hastening on apace. Elohim will have a people pure and true, and the mighty sifting soon to take place. We shall be better able to measure the strength of Israel, for the signs reveal that the time is near when the Yahshua will manifest that his fan is in his hand, and he will thoroughly purge his floor. For the days are fast approaching, when there will be a great perplexity and confusion. Satan's clothes and the angel robes will deceive, if possible, the very elect. There will be God's many and Lord's many. Every wind of doctrine will be blown. Those who have rendered supreme homage to science, falsely so called, will not be the leaders then. Those who have trusted in the intellect, genius, or talent will now then stand at the head of the rank and file. They did not keep pace with the light. Those who have proved themselves unfaithful will not then be entrusted with the flock. In the last solemn work, great men will be engaged. They are self-sufficient, independent of Yahweh, and he cannot use them. The Yahweh has faithful servants who, in the shaking, testing time, will be disclosed to view. So the shaking takes place in the testing time. There are precious ones now hidden. They have not bowed the knee to Baal. They have not had the light which has been shining in a concentrated blaze upon you. Testimonies, Volume 5, page 80. In the sifting, shaking time, Testimonies, Volume 5, page 80, we shall be better able to know how many are really serving the Yahweh. Those whom we may think are to lead the that the congregation into the kingdom may be missing. Now, who was that at Gilead Center? We were told for 33 years that we didn't have nothing but the prophecy back that up. And Brother Johnson, he said that he just proved beyond a shadow of doubt that he was the man that was supposed to lead the purified church into the kingdom. Maybe missing, he said. Well, he's missing. And while others entirely unknown to us take their place. And here Rollis is the number one candidate with the most knowledge and everything to lead the kingdom, lead the people, a purified congregation into the kingdom. Well, he called himself, named his movement the Kingdom in 1970. So how are you going to lead a sinful kingdom into a purified kingdom when you believe that there's only one kingdom to begin with? And he didn't believe that his kingdom was sinful. But he had a sinful kingdom, according to Amos chapter 9. Moreover, it will be found that those who are constantly drilling into the minds of the laity that there are to be no more messengers sent from Yahweh, no more truth needed, and that someone is constantly trying to deceive them, that they should keep aloof from everything that does not meet the minister's approval. Those who do this are the very ones who have already unwittingly deceived the laity and are doing their best to keep them deceived. This fact, you see, stands up high like a beacon on a hill. So the only thing their carefulness not to be deceived will accomplish, unless they awake, is to keep themselves deceived forever and away from the truth. These shall not be able to stand when the Yeshua appears in his temple. That's in the temple and the headquarters for or the congregation of the house of David. Hence, the revival Reformation brought to view in the Malachi is the first and the last of its kind, and is indeed to be crowned with the purification of the house of Israel. Those who do not awake now will therefore sleep forever. For the latest sin deception from within should not be news unto you, for you well know that the congregation has never in any age been deceived by any but by its own ministry. Now those who have been as highly esteemed as were the members of the Sanhedrin, those who crucified the Savior, those who kept the nation deceived until it was too late to recover, thus it was then, before then, and thus it has been ever since, and so it is now. Stop and think this through. No, I am not telling you something new. You know this to be so, but you never think of it, and that is the main trouble with the entire denomination. The Seventh-day Adventist congregation purified shall, which is the house of David, shall nevertheless triumph and march on to victory. Clear as the moon, clear as the sun, and terror as an army with banners, she is to go forth into all the world conquering and to conquer. Prophecy in Kings 7:25. Let us once and forever realize that the devil is more shrewd than we can imagine. He is not particular what you believe so long as he can keep you ignorant of the revealed truth. This is what he is now doing within the Seventh-day Adventist congregation, using men of the influence, men who can put on the best front, men who are clever, who know how to gain the confidence of the people, men who can easily and quietly lead the Adventists away from the Yahweh's messages for today, for the message of the judgment for the living, and I might add, in this 12th parabolic hour, and the time for the purification of the house of David, the cleansing of the sanctuary, Daniel 8:14, Satan is doing as good a job now as he did in Yahshua's time. Is not the knowledge of the Malachi's prophecy, the purification of the congregation, the judging for the living, more important unto the congregation than the judging for the dead? Does it look to you as though you are being deceived by this Bible study, or does it look to you as though you need to reform? Hear therefore what the Yahweh is about to do, Malachi 3:5. And I will come near unto you to judgment, and I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers, and against the adulterers, and against the false swearers, against those that oppress the harlot and his raging, the widow and the fatherless, and that turn aside the stranger from his right, and fear not me, saith the Yahshua the host. These are only some of the sins in the church in which men are indulging. Speaking of the message bearers of today and of the church's condition, inspiration for the set. They lament and afflict their souls because pride, avarice, selfishness, and deception of almost every kind are in the church. The spirit of Yahweh which prompts to reproof is trampled under the foot of all the servants of the Satan triumph. Yahweh is honored, dishonored. The truth made of none effect, Testimony Volume 5, page 2, 10, and 11. You will receive the mark of the deliverance only if you sigh and cry against all these abominations, Ezekiel 9:46. To this list of the sins that Yahweh calls attention unto the fallen and asks us to repent, Malachi 3:6-9. For I am the Yahweh, I change not, therefore you sons of Jacob are not consumed. Even from the days of your fathers ye are gone away from mine ordinances and have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith Yahshua the host. But ye said, wherein shall we return? Will a man rob Yahweh? Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In the tithes and offerings. You are cursed with a curse, for ye have robbed me even this whole nation. These verses do not blame the individual members of the church for robbing the Yahweh, but the whole denomination, the whole nation. Moreover, you will note that the story of the Malachi chapter 3 begins with the chapter 2. There you will note that the Yahshua addresses the ministry, not the laity, saying, O ye priests, this commandment is for you, Malachi 2:1. Plainly then, the trouble lies in the fact that though the laity as a rule pay faithfully tithes and offerings, Yahweh nevertheless is robbed because the denomination is taking the tithes and at the same time is fighting rather than accepting and promulgating his message for today, for the judgment for the living. His money is used to cheat his people from his truth instead of enlightening them with it, keeping his people in the darkness and deception, even barring them from the investigating of the message they are for themselves. What a charge. Now, I want to make a point here. Brother Johnson, during his 33 years as his ministry, he published Truth, sent back to the Mother Church, to the Adventist Church. And he was faithful in doing that. And he had some money earmarked for the gospel work. Whenever the work would pick up at Gilead Center, then he was told to use this money if he needed it to add to the money that he had and put it into the gospel work. Well, we know he didn't do that. He lied about it one time and said he didn't have any money for that additional work. And the Adventist Church had been withholding funds ever since 1844 or 1890. It was since that double team leadership showed up in 1890, showing we had a dual leadership in the Adventist Church. And so the General Conference took over the money. They took over the coffers of money, the tithe payers' money, instead of Ellen G. White getting the money up in 1890, the General Conference, well, the General Conference, Ellen G. White and James White, they got the tithe money up until 1863. And when James White went and orchestrated the setting up of the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists, he created a double leadership there. And that double leadership immediately took over the collecting of the tithes and the offerings. Now, I'm sure that the Adventists give Ellen G. White a lot of money herself while she was alive, personally. But those that pulled off and joined the General Conference leadership over Ellen G. White's leadership, they paid their money to the General Conference. And the General Conference never gave one penny of that toward the furthering of the truth that Ellen G. White was publishing, except to set up publishing houses and publish her books that she wrote so they could have a source of revenue for themselves and collect them, the revenue money for themselves. So that's how they operated clear up to 2002. Rhoda Johnson didn't change a thing for the operation of the Adventist Church. Okay, here is what Yahweh would have the laity do. Malachi 3:10. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now herewith, saith Yahshua the host, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. Where is one to look for Yahweh's storehouse? Wherever Yahweh's truth is for the today, from wherever meat in due season is dispensed. For the statement, bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, implied that some are already bringing into it, but not all. This, along with the charge that the whole nation is robbing Yahweh, positively shows that the tithes are now brought not to Yahweh's storehouse, but to some other house. To repeat, Yahweh's storehouse has ever been and ever will be where the message of the hour is, where the present truth is, the house from which meat in the due season is dispensed at the time the tithes are paid. So James White, the husband of Ellen G. White, he created a second storehouse, and he became the head of that second storehouse himself. And you know, whenever the General Conference organized, they had to have money and income to keep going, and so they got their money and income from the people. So there was two storehouses set up in the Adventist Church. I'd never seen this before. So when it says bring all the tithe into the storehouse, it implies that some are already bringing into it, but not all. So where is the other part going? If they're not bringing all of it into that storehouse, where is the other part going? The other part is going to that other storehouse. Since the old message, the judgment for the dead, is out of date, as is the message of Noah's flood, it is plainly seen that inasmuch as the denomination as a whole has rejected and is fighting the message of the hour, but is still collecting the tithes of people, it is indeed robbing Yahweh. Okay. His people are therefore asked to send their tithes to the storehouse. When present truth is dispensed, for it is the present truth that the flock needs now. There are many precious truths contained in the word of Yahweh, but it is present truth that the flock needs now. Early writing 63. Those who obey have this promise. Malachi 3:11-12. And I will rebuke the devourer for your sake, and he shall destroy and the fruit, not destroy the fruits of your ground. Neither shall your vine cast her fruit before the time in the field. Thus saith Yahshua of hosts. And all nations shall call you blessed, for you shall be a delight in some land, saith Yahshua of hosts. Under no other conditions does the promise his blessings, you have a hard luck, You cannot make ends meet. Stop paying your tithe. Note carefully that Yahweh requires not only tithe, but tithe. That is, tithe and free will offering. He does not want them spent on something of your own devising. You are to bring them into the storehouse, not to the devil's storehouse that the general conference created, but to Yahweh's storehouse, the one that the prophet created, Ellen G. White, not the one that her husband, James White, created. Concerning the first tithe, the Yahweh had declared, I have given the children of Levi all the tenth in Israel. The children of Levi now would be the house of David that is set up now in this 12th hour. But in regard to the second he commanded, thou shalt eat before the Yahshua, the king, in the place, for he shall choose the place his name. There the tithe of thy corn, and of the wine, and of thine oil, and the firstlings of thy herds, and of thy flock, that thou mayest learn to fear the Yahshua thy king always, or the Yahweh the Elohim, the Father always, as well. For this tithe is equivalent in the money. For they were for 2 years to bring into the place where the sanctuary was established. After the presenting a thank offering unto the Yahweh, in a specified position and a specified portion unto the priest, the offerers were to use the remainder for a religious feast, in which the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow should participate. This provision was made for the thank offerings and feast at the yearly festival, and the people were drawn to the society of the priests and Levites that they might receive instruction and encouragement in the service of the Yahweh. Every third year, however, this second tithe was to be used at home, and the entertaining of the Levite and the poor, as Moses said, that they may eat within thy gates and be filled. For this tithe would provide a fund for the uses of the charity and hospitality, Patriarchs and Prophets, page 530. But the command is, they shall not appear before the Yahweh entry, Deuteronomy 16:16. Yahweh does not lie. He carries out his promises. He never fails. There is nothing more offensive in him than unbelief and unfaithfulness in his word. Malachi 3:13-15. Your words have been stout against me, said Yahweh. Yet you say, what have we spoken so much against thee? You have said, it is vain to serve Yahweh, and what profit is it that we have kept his ordinance, and that we have walked mournfully before the Yahshua of hosts? And now we call the proud happy, yea, they that work wickedness are set up, yea, they that tempt Yahweh are even delivered. Okay. Here is pointed out another need of the reform. We as a denomination are charged with the imagining that the unrighteous are better off than those who serve Yahweh. Before drawing such a conclusion, let each first examine himself and see if he is really and honestly serving Yahweh. Malachi 3:16-17. Then they that feared the Yahweh spake often one to another, and the Yahweh hearkened and heard it, and a book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Yahweh, and that thought upon his name. And they shall be mine, as saith the Yahshua the host, in that day when I make up my jewels, and I will spare them as a man spareth his own son that serveth him. If we give the undivided attention to Yahweh's word, if we do all he asked us to do, we will indeed be his people, his jewels. Then a book of remembrance shall be written of us, and our good and heroic deeds shall be read by the redeemed throughout eternity. Malachi 3:18, then shall you return to discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serveth Yahweh and him that serveth him not. We may not now see the difference between him who serves Yahweh and him who serves him not, but the day is fast approaching when the difference will be seen by all. Malachi 4:1-4. For behold, the day cometh that shall burn as an oven, and all the proud, yea, and all that do wickedly shall be stubble. And the day that cometh shall burn them up, saith Yahshua the host, that it shall leave them neither root nor branch. Remember ye the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded unto him in Horeb for all Israel, with the statutes and the judgment. Here we are asked to remember the law of Moses, which Yahweh commanded in Horeb. The Ten Commandments, the statutes and judgment the Leviticus 23, in addition to the Ten Commandments, Deuteronomy 4:10-14, that is all the holy days, Passover, Pentecost, and the Atonement, Feast of Tabernacles, additional, matter of fact, 70 holy days were set up there at Mount Horeb. That was Mount Sinai, where Moses brought the children of Israel in the wilderness there, of sin, it's called it. And he said, they were admonished to remember the law of Moses, which Yahweh commanded in Horeb, with the Ten Commandments, with the statutes and judgments of Leviticus 23, Deuteronomy 4:10-14, Malachi 4:5-6. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of Yahshua, and he shall turn the heart of the fathers unto the children, and the heart of the children unto their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. But the word behold calls our attention back into chapter 3, verse 1, where we are told that Yahweh will send his messenger to prepare the way of the Yeshua for the judgment for the living, for the purification. Obviously, besides preparing the way of the Yeshua, Elijah, the Yeshua's messenger, is to declare that the great and dreadful day of Yahweh is at hand. Or the great and dreadful day of Yahshua is at hand, because that's what John the Baptist did. He told them that Yahshua was at hand back then. And they met him that very day that he told them that at the River Jordan. For the work of the ancient Elijah, you know, was the closing work for the typical apostate Israel, the church. Likewise, the work of Elijah of this day must be the antitypical closing work for his temple, the house of David, Daniel 2:44-45, before the great and dreadful day of Yahshua, Testimony Volume 3, page 266. Moreover, if the Elijah is a messenger, he is to have a message. And that message is the fifth angel's message, folks, about the fifth group of labors in Matthew 20, verse 6. His message is to be heart-searching, for he shall turn the hearts of the fathers unto the children, and the hearts of the children to the fathers. The fathers shall long to see their children saved, and the children shall long to see their fathers saved. And this revival reformation shall in the truth be crowned with the purification of the church, with Yahshua slaying the antitypical false prophets of today, Isaiah 66:16. For the time has come that judgment is against the house of Yahweh, and if it first begin at us, what shall the end be of them that obey not the Yahshua, Y-A-H-S-P-E-L, of the Yahweh? 1 Peter 4:17. For by the fire and by his sword will the Yahweh plead with all flesh, and the slain of the Yahweh shall be many, and I will set a sign among them, and I will send those that escape of them unto the nations, unto Tarshish, Pul, and Lud, that draw the bow to Tubal and Avan, to the isles and far off, that have not heard my fame, neither have seen my glory, and they shall declare my glory among the Gentiles. They shall bring all your brethren for an offering unto the Yahshua out of all nations, upon horses and in chariots and in litters, and upon mules and upon swift beasts to my holy mountain, Jerusalem, saith Yeshua, as the children of Israel bring an offering in a clean vessel unto the house of the Yahweh, Isaiah 6:16, 19 and 20. This slaying, you see, takes place before the probation closes, for the escaped ones are sent unto the Gentiles to finish their gospel work together. All their brethren from among them. Therefore, we ought to give the more earnest heed unto the things which we have heard, lest at any time we should let them slip. For if the word spoken by angels was steadfast in every transgression and disobedience, received a just recompense of reward, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation, which at the first began to be spoken by the Yahshua, and was confirmed unto us by them that heard him? Let us therefore fear, lest a promise being left us of the entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. Hebrews 2:1-3 and Hebrews 4:1. Let us start now with a time of greeting, volume 1, number 8, Leviticus. It says, the question is, Laodicea or Davidian, which? The second, I am to answer the question, how do I know that I am not still a Laodicean Seventh-day Adventist, in other words? Now that I am now a true Davidian. In order to intelligently discuss this question, we must first have a mental picture of what Laodiceans are like and what Davidians must be like. I shall read. In Revelation 3:14-18, and unto the angel of the congregation of the Laodiceans write, these things saith the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of Yahweh. I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would that thou wert cold or hot, so then because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth, because thou sayest, I am rich and increase of goods and have neither nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable, poor and blind and naked. I counsel thee to buy me gold tried in the fire. Now where do you go find this gold tried in the fire? Malachi 4. And that thou mayest be rich in white raiment, that thou mayest be clothed, and that the shame of thy nakedness do not appear, and anoint thine eyes as eyes have, that thou mayest see. What is wrong with the angel of Laodicea? Now Vichyha is addressing the leader of the Seventh-day Adventist Church here in 1931. He's writing these time of greetings. He is lukewarm, he is neither cold nor hot. The Yahweh recommends that he either be cold or hot, uncomfortable, in search of something better rather than to stay lukewarm, well contented with his spiritual attainment, supposedly rich in increase of good, with the truth, not knowing that he is spiritually poor, blind, and naked. He is warned of it by the all-knowing one and asked to repent. If the Yahweh's own warning fails to change his mind, then the only thing left for the Yahweh to do is to spew him out of his mouth. By the words, I am rich and increased with goods, the angel of the Laodicea is saying that he has good understanding of the Bible and has a testimony for the church, and that these make him rich. And that, in addition to these, he has other denominational publications, his increase. He thus deceives himself that he has the whole truth to carry him right on through the pearly gates, that he needs nothing more. The Yahshua counsels, however, that he buy of him gold that is tried in the fire, so that he may be rich and unveils the fact that the Laodiceans, rich or not, pure gold, and that their so-called increase is not an increase of the truth, but worthless, uninspired interpretation not tried in the fire. For the angel of Laodicea is naked. Now you know who the angel of Laodicea is by now, and I don't have to tell you anymore. That was that last one in charge of the candlestick, though, of the Adventist Church. And that was at Gilead Center and Kermit through 2003. So the angel of Laodicea is naked too. He has not the wedding garment on. He has not the righteousness of Yahshua. And his being naked, not having on any clothes, denotes that he has no righteousness save his own, the righteousness with which he was born, his bare skin. Moreover, he is spiritually blind, and that for his ailment, the Yahshua Asab is the only remedy. If he would but take the Yahshua's counsel and apply the statutes 89, he could then see. Well, this brings the first of our studies to our contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11, pick up our audio archive. We're going to close this service now with a song. Breath in the Soul by Elijah David. A song that I've written February 26, 2006. I used to like the things that meant good to me. Just like the world started with me. A little okay, it's a sample, it's part of me. Just like sin, that's what it is. Started out with a little kiss and ended up with bills long overdue. After I started having up and sampling all that wonderful stuff, I went to the yard and threw in the towel. He asked me what changed my mind. That red wine and these lies that feel living in being wet to drown. For the word of the hour is breath and the soul, something that I'll never let go, something that means more than tongues can tell. Rising up early, going to bed late in the quiet hours, and then it fades, and then I fall asleep, for all is well. I used to like the things that appealed to me, just like others I couldn't see. Couldn't take Yahweh's word to save my soul. Then one day he opened his book, something that I'd longed for so, something that had never will grow old. Being dead as the spirit as I began to read, I soon discovered I had a great need to be baptized in the likeness of his death. I long for the day to be like him, to be free from sin and whole again. Can I close my eyes and see rest? Born of the Spirit and washed in the blood, quenching the fire like nothing else does, fills me with his love now and eternally. So take hold, brother, and don't you let go. I wrap his love all around your soul, putting it on display for all the world to see. For the bread of the hour is breath in the soul. That I'll never let go. Something that means more than tongue can tell. Rising up early, going to bed late, and if I had hours of meditating, then I fall asleep for all is well. And then I fall.